Please rise. Court is now in session. Please be seated.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Are you ready to hear argument in this matter? Are you ready to proceed?
Very good, Your Honor.
Very well.
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Dryden. I represent the interests of the Louis and Fantasia. I'm assisted on the briefs herein by Christopher Selzer, who's at council table. Looking at the lower court's ruling, I was stricken by the notation in what I'm going to call Fantasia 1, the underlying rationale of the court in evaluating the issues before it. The court said at page 7 of its first opinion, quote, there is a strong judicial tradition in Delaware which supports a presumption of the constitutionality of a legislative enactment. All doubts are resolved in favor of the challenged legislative act. That basis and premise that seems to predominate the remainder of the analysis. Unfortunately, that's wrong. If I can direct the court's attention to the Supreme Court's decision of Shad v. Mount Ephraim, Justice Blackmun's concurrence, right at the beginning of the concurrence. First, I would emphasize that the presumption of validity that traditionally attends local government's exercise of its voting of its zoning powers carries little, if any, weight where the zoning regulation trenches on rights of expression protected under the First Amendment. In order for a reviewing court to determine whether a zoning restriction that impinges on free speech is narrowly drawn to further a sufficiently substantial governmental interest, the zoning authority must be prepared to articulate and support a reasoned and significant basis for its decision.
Again, close that. Since it's a concurring opinion, what did he cite in support of that proposition? Hopefully, earlier majority opinion.
Yes, I believe that that's, and that's basically, I think the Schultz case has been the one that they've been referencing in those regards for that, and it's a straightforward standard that when looking at a First Amendment matter as far as that is supposedly content-based, that it's looked at in a very strict fashion. But again, Justice Blackmun was just clarifying and joining the opinion, making sure that everyone knows that this is the standard that has to be applied here.
Tell me again what he cited for that proposition.
I think he's citing Schultz. He references Ante at 68, which could be actually Snyder versus State, 3 OSUS. It appears that that's what he's referencing, because that's the last cite that's referenced in the formal opinion of the court. When looking at this analysis, then, we can turn to the court's view of vagueness. The court was very impressed below with the Florida's court's rationale in the City of Dayton versus Del Persio matter. I can't understand why and how the court says that after reading City of Dayton versus Del Persio, how the current statute relative to requirements as to pasties and tape under the breast is anything but vague. In fact, the lower court in that matter specifically held that that statute was vague. The interesting part was the dissent of Judge Sharp in those regards said that, well, if you look at it, we should look at this in its most restrictive fashion, such as this court has noted in Richardson versus Weil. And we should look at it and say that, well, as long as there's a pasty and a tape directly under the areola, that it's constitutional. That would be fine. We'll save the statute in that reading.
Well, help me focus on your argument by telling me, is it your position that your client, as a matter of the First Amendment, should have been able to engage in this conduct without a license?
Yes.
And to the extent that there's a licensing requirement, you're saying the licensing requirement is unconstitutionally vague?
Yes. And when you take a look at what Del Persio did was exactly that. The lower court made those rulings. Then the reviewing court said, wait a second, we have a 21st Amendment issue here. We don't have to get to that. They sidestepped it. But the point is that when you look at the rationale of what Del Persio actually said, I That's exactly what our argument here is today. We're looking at a situation wherein we have, we have a situation wherein you have to look at the statute as a whole and see and make sure that this isn't a pretext for suppression of First Amendment or free speech rights under the Delaware Constitution. Well, let's look at this statute. Back in 1977, this statute originated and the preamble was set up, and it was an adult bookstore statute only. It wasn't adult entertainment. This statute has gone through so many changes, but everyone goes back to the original preamble back in 1977. Well, what was the studies? What did they rely upon to say that we can limit you to wearing a bikini bottom and a conservative top? Because if that, what did they rely upon? Because there isn't anything. What did they rely upon when they look at Amico number one back in 1984 that says 500-foot residential spacing requirement unconstitutional, and they put it back in 24 Del C section 1610C? It's there now. It's still unconstitutional. When we were before the federal court, Newcastle County's attorney stood up before the court and said, we think that's unconstitutional too. There's a problem with the way the statute has been. It's not just one piece of the statute. It's how it's all set together. You have 1,500 feet between the two establishments. You can't have one within four. You can't have one in a shopping center that has four or more stores in it. You can't be within 2,800 feet of a church or school, notwithstanding the fact that in this circumstance, you'd have to go 3,300 feet, what have you, if you walk from where the front door of Fantasia is to where this church is, the Church of the Living Word, which is in the middle of an industrial park.
So are you arguing that the entire statute is unconstitutional?
At this point, absolutely. The way that it basically completely obviates and eliminates the right, the way it's set up, even the inclusion of, in 1617, of the income tax situation, which isn't in front of this court per se, but when you realize what the real rationale is and what it is, there wasn't a sign up that says, hey, if you want to operate a sexually oriented business in this state, go away. We don't want you here, and we're going to stop you. Now, my learned opponent has referenced the Amico case back in 1984, Amico 2. The Amico 2 case dealt with a far different statute than what's before this court today. They're night and day differences. The important part, and I think the part that Judge Wright really keyed in upon when looking at the statute, and again, this is summary judgment. Amico was summary judgment by the plaintiffs attempting to get as a matter of law the statute at that point in time, how it was then wiped out. And the court said, absent of showing a significant restriction of access to protected forms of activity, finds that the church school spacing requirement does not constitute an unnecessary interference with First Amendment freedoms. I was there. I tried the Amico case. And when the two big exhibits that were put up before the court and before that jury of six were two maps of Newcastle County, the first referencing over 30 technically valid sites that you could put one, and the second referencing 9 realistic sites where they were reasonably available, the Renton standard, reasonably available sites where you could put something. I'm not talking about economically feasible. I'm talking about, you know, something that wasn't already there, like the state police barracks, or in this case, the maintenance shed at Christiana Mall, which is supposedly one of the sites that we have available to us. Reasonable standards, or reasonably available sites. Nowadays, we've got 12 technically available sites, and the next map you can't put up because there aren't any reasonably available sites. And then they say, well, gee whiz, you're violating the law because you had someone, dance with pasties on and what have you, and God forbid, showing their buttocks as far as, or their bottoms or whatever you want to call it, as far as something that's perfectly legal to do anywhere else in the state. And look at Barnes and take a look at City of Erie versus Pabst. You're dealing with those cases, the Supreme Court says an overall ban is fine. If you're going to say ban public nudity, fine, that's great. We're going to look at under an intermediate scrutiny standard, and that's what we're going to do. And that's fine, because there's a valid right, and it doesn't, it's not aimed at expressive conduct, it's just a ban on nudity. Don't have that here. Some way the court took that argument, the lower court took that argument, and decided that rational basis was the appropriate standard to apply. Rational basis on a First Amendment case. I mean, if you're taking a look at what Judge Talbert did and saying it's a definitional phrase solely, it's not truly a time, space, and manner restriction. It's not a time, space, and manner restriction, as City of Clarkson said in their analysis. This is strict scrutiny when you're looking at that definitional phrase. And strict scrutiny basically is presumptively constitutionally invalid.
Can I return to something? You said that you were challenging the statute as being unconstitutionally vague.
Yes.
And I'm not sure I saw where the trial court addressed that. Was that an argument you made to the trial court as well?
Yes, Your Honor. In Fantasia 1, it was specifically made to the trial court, and the arguments were basically that the statute is written, especially with regards to the breast situation, could be read as my client did, that you cover the nipple and have a tape directly under it, all area directly under the areola, that they had complied and weren't in violation of the statute. This is what the lower court in Del Persia found to be specifically vague themselves, and again, the dissent in Del Persia noted that you could read it a little bit more strictly, which again, I think this court would do under Richardson. They would read it strictly, but even then, you're dealing with the fact that my clients didn't violate it. So that's what we're looking at. But the right here of First Amendment, and I know it's on the outer edge of the First Amendment. I understand that expressive conduct is on the outer realm. But just because, one of the arguments in the state's reply brief, we think that nobody wants this. You know, it doesn't matter that they applied the wrong standard. It applies that the lower court applied the wrong standard. It matters that the state wasn't given the burden, which they're required under Renton, of meeting that there is a substantial basis for this, that there were studies set forth, and that there is a reasonable restriction, reasonable alternative. This is absolutely, it basically screams out that this entire statute needs to be revisited by this court. And the court needs to set up interstitially and say, under Delaware law and under federal law, we're not going to have this. You've gone way too far.
So if you prevail, what are the implications of the result you're advocating?
The convictions at this point in time would be overturned, and there would be the right to go forward with an appropriate application, although I have a question about that as a prior restraint, in that there is a requirement in Newcastle County that you have to spend $500 to exercise the right for an application. And I think that's another issue for another day, but they would, if they decide to proceed with an adult entertainment statute or a license, that they could do so. But at this point, that's our primary goal.
Well, I'm unclear because I thought you said the entire statute's unconstitutional, so there would be no licensing of any such establishment.
Well, then during the interim, you're right, there would be no licensing, and I apologize. You're right, Your Honor, that there would be no licensing if the entire statute was stricken down, if only the definitional aspects, which really are what my clients were convicted under, were stricken down, and the spacing requirements. There still might be an adult entertainment commission and the other requirements that are not specifically, perhaps attacked, and that would be up to Your Honors to decide whether or not what would be left of the statutory framework after the analysis was completed.
And thank you. You still have about 5.5 minutes left.
Thank you.
morning, or this afternoon now.
Excuse me, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Kim Avazian, and I represent the state in this matter. This case is before the Court as an appeal, a criminal appeal from convictions. However, this is really a zoning matter, and as such, this is a novel issue for me personally, although obviously not for the state to be arguing.
Can we start off by telling us your position with regard to the standard? Do you agree with Mr. Dryden that the Superior Court applied the incorrect standard?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree because of the way the procedural history of this case. And the state attempted to make clear in its answering brief that the issues that were raised before the lower court were raised in a piecemeal fashion over a period of approximately two years. And the first Fantasia decision that the lower court made, or excuse me, Fantasia 1, one of the issues that was raised had to do with the vagueness, alleged vagueness and overbreadth of the definitional section of the Act. And the court in that case addressed the issues of vagueness and overbreadth and found that the descriptions of the covering that was required over the female breast was not vague, nor was the description or the definition of buttocks vague that a person of ordinary intelligence could not understand it. I mean, there are other definitions in this statute that have not been attacked by the appellants, and I find listening to the argument today very interesting. Another attack. Now we're attacking the statute as a whole, whereas initially it was based on the attack, the motion to dismiss was based on a vagueness and overbreadth challenge, an equal protection challenge, as well as a challenge to the absence or alleged absence of a factual basis. Subsequently, the argument expanded to include a First Amendment challenge to the limitations that were present, the actual limitations that prevented Fantasia from having a license issued, i.e., it was within 2,800 feet of a church, the Church of the Living Word. And that's what this case is all about. This act does not prohibit Fantasia from having a license and operating and presenting expressive dance. What this act does is require it to be located more than 2,800 feet from a church. And as the this case proceeded in the lower court, the parties stipulated that there were 12 available sites in Newcastle County for the location of Fantasia to operate without violating the requirements. And as such, under the Renton standard, the intermediate scrutiny standard, you have a situation where there are reasonable alternative avenues of expression for the type of expressive dance and other activities that go on in Fantasia that went on without the benefit of a license until the state initiated prosecution. And once the license is issued, barring activity that is deemed obscene, they can continue to operate with the women wearing, the dancers wearing, G-strings and pasties, or even less, as long as it doesn't violate the obscenity laws.
Now I'm confused. It sounds as if what you're telling us is that the only issue before the court as to the constitutionality of this statute is the impact it has in terms of availability, in terms of where they could actually locate an establishment, as opposed to there being an issue as to whether they can understand how to comply with the statute in terms of what costumes people are wearing, which is the vagueness argument. There, if I'm understanding correctly, that's not even before the court, is it?
All these issues were raised at different times. The vagueness, equal protection, which has not been argued on appeal, and the restriction, the spacing limitation, linear distance between the adult entertainment establishment and a church or a school, which is 2,800 feet.
Right, okay, well, here's my problem. If they've been doing business, right, and they've been having their girls dressed in whatever they were dressed in, right, and if I understand correctly, the state never came in and said, you're violating this statute because the women are not properly clothed, right?
They
or
did.
Not right?
They did. There was an undercover police operation, and they were indicted for operating without a license on the basis of the fact that they were wearing G-strings and pasties, and that there was touching and fondling and simulated sexual activity. All these activities and states of dress or undress,
right,
as you will,
right,
meet the definitional standards of the act, which trigger the requirement that a license be issued before.
Right, okay. I'm sorry to be taking up your time on this, but I'm still confused. If they were doing the exact same thing that the undercover police found them doing, but they were located somewhere farther away from a church and had a license, would they still be charged?
No.
So there wasn't an issue about the appropriateness of the clothing that the woman was wearing, right?
No, there was no prohibition against it. The only prohibition was that they were doing these activities and revealing themselves without having a license. And they couldn't have a license because they were located within 2,800 feet of a church. So my point here today is that's the crux of these cases. That's what we're really here about.
And his position is, we should be able to do this without a license.
That's his position now.
Generally. And if that succeeds, then you can do it anywhere. It doesn't matter how close you are to a church. So what we come down to is they wanted to engage in activity that you could only engage in if you were licensed. And if they wanted to engage in that type of activity, they couldn't do it there because of the distance requirement. They'd have to relocate.
That's correct. That's what this is about, the cost and inconvenience of relocating. And they've attempted to argue that they didn't understand the definitional requirements and it's vague and overbroad. And on appeal, the argument is that the standard of review used by the lower court was incorrect because this is a First Amendment intermediate scrutiny standard.
Well, aren't they saying that there's no realistic location where they can relocate and therefore this amounts to a prohibition?
Well, they conceded at the lower court that there were 12 available sites. So, I mean, to say now that there's no realistic, it's hard to understand what that means. However, if you look at Renton, the United States Supreme Court case, the court said, we're not offering or saying that the appellants have the right to an alternative site at bargain basement prices. We're not even saying it has to be unoccupied. That does not make it unconstitutional that there are alternative sites available that people have to develop or get pay more for the lease or whatever.
What does the record reflect on how 2,800 feet was reached as the standard? I mean, if we look at it hypothetically, you can imagine a situation where you could pick a certain number of feet, 5,000 feet, whatever it is, and there would be no place anywhere in the state that wasn't within a mile of a church. And then, basically, you could never have one of these establishments. So why is 2,800 feet selected, and why is that a good benchmark?
Well, the record demonstrates, the record basically is...
it happens to be half a mile.
It's a little more than a half a mile, I understand that. And I think if you look at the Amico case, 101 FRD 472, the court discusses that the 2,800 foot boundary was the result of basically the county council adhering to recommendations of the Department of Planning and Planning Board and remarks of planning of various councilmen as well as a hearing at the Planning Commission level. And that the feeling was that 2,800 feet would be sufficient to isolate churches and schools, and in particular to isolate children who would be attending those churches and schools from the deleterious secondary effects of adult business, adult entertainment business establishments. I don't know, because the record that I have seen is sparse as to whether they considered 500 feet or 1,000 feet. I think there was a reference to the fact that 500 feet was the limit as far as houses and residences, but the fact of the matter is that churches and schools where children would tend to congregate and travel to and from, you know, outside of their own neighborhood, it was important to make it a greater distance to ensure that the children would not be subjected to these, what were perceived as evils.
Well, where does the focus on accomplishing this in the least restrictive way come in?
Well, it basically, you have to balance that against what impact it has, you know, whether this is a content-neutral or a content-based regulation, and where, how much of an impact this has. And I think we get back to the question of how many alternative sites there are. And if you look at the numbers, and the appellants presented some figures and percentages, and the state countered with some other figures and percentages, but if you look at the actual affidavits of the experts, the state experts versus the appellant expert, in a way, we've got apples and oranges. We've got the state's experts looking at only the CR, the commercial regional zone, and you've got the appellants arguing that we have to look at the total amount of land in Newcastle County, or at least unincorporated Newcastle County.
Well, help us understand, if you have a building, and everyone agrees for purposes of my question, and that whatever the advertising on the exterior of the building is, that everyone agrees is permissible. Right. But what goes on inside the building needs to be licensed. Why do you still need a distance requirement?
Because at least it was found in the various Amico and Mitchell and other cases that have addressed this, primarily in the Delaware District Court, that the secondary effects of these establishments, i.e. the crime, obscenity crimes, prostitution, I think they even listed things such as urination in parking areas and just a spreading of crime and obscene activities beyond the actual establishment into the surrounding neighborhood.
Well, there's a case out of New York decided by the New York Court of Appeals. I don't have the name in front of me, but they addressed this same question based on your answer with regard to an adult bookstore. And the Attorney General had just closed the adult bookstore. And the holding was, you know, before you close the adult bookstore, you need to arrest the people outside that are engaging in criminal activity. And so my question is, you know, if that's the concern, that people are engaged in crimes outside the building, why isn't the solution to arrest the people that are committing crimes in public?
Well, I think one of the concerns had to do with the crimes occurring, such as prostitution or other things that they could not successfully, the state could not successfully prosecute, whether because the identities of the establishment owners were concealed because it hadn't been licensed. They never really talked so much about arresting the people in the neighborhood who were perhaps the patrons of the establishment who were going out and committing further crimes outside. But I think the overall concern was that if you did not regulate these types of establishments, if you didn't ask the owners or require the owners to reveal information about themselves and the operation, you would not be able to control the level of crime that would occur both at the site potentially and into the surrounding areas. And this sort of regulation, you know, has relatively minimal impact on the establishment and the owners of the establishment. I mean, it is a licensing requirement. many professions, most professions in this state, many occupations, require practitioners to be licensed. And so here, requiring them to be licensed, requiring them to be located a certain distance away from sensitive areas so as not to create problems, to protect children, to protect residential neighborhoods, all these have minimal impacts and do not prevent the expression of the protected First Amendment speech or expressive conduct, if you will, that Fantasia and other places like Fantasia provide. And again, they can continue to provide that sort of product, if you will, in other locations in Newcastle County.
Well, Kent, as a practical matter, provided at the same location, if they entice the church to move?
They can, and they previously enticed another church to move that was located even closer. They bought up the lease of the St. James Temple, I believe was the name of it. And that's, an activity that a businessman can do, or business people can do, so that the question is whether or not they have to make alternative business plans or whether they can require or request that this court, declare the state act unconstitutional so that any adult establishment, entertainment establishment, can operate, can it locate itself anywhere next to a school, next to a church, in a residential neighborhood, because otherwise it would infringe their First Amendment rights. I mean, that's taking an incredible bludgeon to a statute that was crafted with the intent of, given the compelling state interest to prevent crime and to protect children, to have a minimal impact on these businesses such that they could continue to pursue their First Amendment protected speech.
I have a question based upon what was just discussed about asking or buying up a church's location so as to make your adult entertainment establishment viable in a particular location. What happens if there's no church anywhere near your establishment when you set up and you're doing business for a year, two, 3 years, you've got a well-known location and clientele and goodwill and all the other things that businesses have, and then a church decides to open up within the prescribed distance? Are you forced to leave then?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question, but since the establishment is a prior existing establishment, I would think not. But I don't know the actual answer.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Are the licenses renewable annually? When you have a license, is it a permanent license, or do you have to reapply, do you know?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay. I take it as a result of this conviction, and if these people found a place 2,800 feet from the church, they still wouldn't be eligible for a license as a result of this conviction. Is that correct?
This is a misdemeanor, I believe. I believe the restriction might apply to felony convictions.
So they would be eligible then?
So they should be eligible. And in that regard, they're really looking at the whole structure, if you will, since it's been raised now. I mean, the argument being made that this, over time, was amended in such a way to force out such activity. The record shows that there are fewer and fewer establishments developing or requesting licenses, which would imply that either the public isn't interested, or there's sufficient numbers of adult uses already in Newcastle County, and it's no longer a really viable marketing or business strategy to locate an adult business there. But in this particular case, as I said before, there are reasonable alternative avenues, and this is all about relocation. They're not being closed down. They're just being asked to relocate before they conduct an otherwise legal operation.
Thank you.
The case utilized by Judge Tolliver below, NW Enterprises, says that the city, or in this case the state, bears the burden of proving the existence of reasonable alternative sites, citing Renton. You know how many non-grandfathered in uses there are in Newcastle County right now? None. Zero.
But what are the 12? And what are the sites that we're hearing about, the 12 of them?
The 12. They're technically there, but the shed of the Christiana Mall.
But what you're saying is the 12 locations that people have identified that don't have a church within 2,800 feet of them. Is that how they got to the 12?
Yeah. And those, out of those 12, you've got the state police barracks, you've got the Christiana Mall maintenance shed, that's going someplace, a Borders bookstore, they're all gone. There's not any place where you can reasonably point to an alternative. And I love the cases that Judge Tolliver used, which was redistricting cases, where they're sitting there saying, well, this section affords at least 1,362 actual confirming sexually oriented business sites and 183 sites that can be operated consistently with the statute.
What exactly was the stipulation? Or was there a stipulation about 12 sites?
There are 12 sites that, technically, there are 14 sites in Newcastle County that meet the definitional requirements of the statute where technically you could put one.
Well, why do you say technically? I mean,
because that's what it is. It's not a reasonable alternative site. It's one you look at the map and you can say, there are 12 pieces that when you draw all the circles as far as 2,800 feet and 500 feet and 1,500 between establishments and not within a shopping center with more than four uses and using the line-to-line requirement and everything else that's thrown in, as far as that you have to jump all these hurdles to get this easy license that they're talking about, nothing easy about it. There are supposedly 12 sites in, well, there are 12 sites in Newcastle County that technically are available for use, but they're not there. I mean, you can't force someone who's already there, the Christiana Mall is not an open site. Renton noted specifically that if you have a sports stadium someplace, that's not a reasonably alternative site, even if you say, well, that's technically available. It's not a reasonable site. That's the thing the lower court missed. That's the thing state, it's their burden to show reasonably alternative sites, not the fact that technically there are 12 sites in Newcastle County.
Well, to help me understand it on the Christiana Mall site, for instance.
Right.
When you say technically available, that means an adult entertainment establishment could be placed in the mall.
Not in the mall itself, in a maintenance shed that is used to support the mall. The mall itself is barred because of the four-store requirement, but there is a maintenance housing area that is adjacent to the mall property that technically could be, if you could, you know, tell the mall they don't need maintenance, or tell Borders bookstores they don't need to be in business, or tell the Neiman's liquor store that you don't need your only parking lot, you sell us your parking lot so we can open up. Or alternatively, you could force someone in an exercise of their First Amendment rights to try to purchase a church. You could say that's the reason, that's the most reasonable alternative that's been offered. I mean, that's something that Judge Tolliver referenced. I mean, this is not reasonable. This is not anything. I mean, you're not even required to basically subdivide property.
In the short amount of time, help me focus on your argument. I know your first argument is, and these people should have been allowed to engage in these states of undress without a license because of the First Amendment. However, to the extent we needed a license, the 2,800 foot requirement is invalid, because if we apply that as the standard, along with these other things you're talking about, four stores, 500 feet, 1,500 feet, and we combine them all together, we have no place to go.
Right. They say go away, and that's why.
But your argument's in the alternative. One, we don't need a license at all. Second, there's no place for us to operate no reasonable alternative for us to operate.
One, under narrowly tailoring the, in viewing the definitional phrases, which again, I believe have to be looked at strictly, but you can, they're vague, we did not fall outside of their ambits to result in a conviction. Alternatively, if we are deemed, and we did try to get a license, by the way, before it was rejected because of this situation, that alternatively, yes, that they've left us no reasonable alternatives, which is required under Renton. When you're looking at some of the
in that regard, tell me if you prevail and then the state wants to enact a valid statute, what combination of distances would they have to come together with to create a number of sites that, in your view, would be reasonable? What are we looking for?
Well, I can only take guidance in the decision of Woodall versus City of El Paso, where when we're talking about reasonable alternatives, they said in almost every, again, this is a redistricting case, in almost every case, if the suggested site proved physically or legally unavailable, there was another site next door or across the street that was also potentially available. There has to be a realistic availability to have the First Amendment rights, freedom of expression, espoused in the state.
And is it your position that as a matter of fact, in this record, none of the 12 sites that have been identified are available? They're simply not...
We set forth a recitation in our reply brief specifying exactly, you know, the problems with each of the sites. As far as, I mean, the best site in the state is the parking lot of the Neiman Liquor Store. I mean, and they're not going to sell their only parking lot and put themselves out of business. But that's technically, so that was subdivided, that's a site. Until someone that's in a house that's currently being used as a floral shop decides to use it as a residence, and as soon as that happens, it's illegal too.
Well, does it have to be for sale to be reasonably available? I mean, what is the test then?
Well, I think that you have to have some, there has to be some property that is available that's not currently being used and using under a long-term type of a lease or a purchase situation. Having a business like a Christiana Mall is not going anywhere. Just like a stadium isn't going anywhere. The police headquarters is not going anywhere. These aren't reasonably all available.
How many licenses, how many establishments are grandfathered in right now?
Two. And it is a one-year annual license here. You go back before the board each year. If the two grandfathered establishments, if either of the establishments loses their license right now in Newcastle County, they're done because they are violative of the 500-foot residence requirement, which is obviously unconstitutional because it's as to a residence, not as to a zoned residential area. But notwithstanding that fact, that's the statute that we now have.
When these 12 to 13 locations were determined, was the 500 feet taken out of the equation?
Yes.
Because everyone agrees it was unconstitutional?
It was taken out of the equation for purposes of the court's findings. But that was, again, we have 12 at this point in time that are part of, the point, it really comes down to this. The state has the burden, not the original defendants, of proving reasonable available alternative sites.
I realize we used a lot of your time with questions, but it is up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your opportunity.
And thank you both for the arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement and will also have a brief recess.
Please rise.